Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Psachim Daf Yud Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur, the second line from the top of Daf Yud Gimel. Before we begin the actual Gemara, let us glance at the side where we have a Nosei Mivneh heading, where we have written Eich Posak Rav Beinyan Zmanei Chometz Be'erev Pesach. So the bow tie that you see will highlight Rav's name regarding this topic of how did Rav rule regarding the times of Chometz, the eating times and the destruction times on the day before Pesach, on the 14th of Nisan. We will then have a volcano shape, which represents She'elos, Loma Rav Nachman Omarav, Posak Davka Kerev Yehuda. We will be asking why does Rav Nachman, in the name of Rav, choose Rebbe Yehuda as the basis of his ruling? Namely, Oichlin Kol Dalid, V'Toilin Kol Chamesh, where eating takes place during the fourth hour of the 14th, but no more than that, and during the fifth hour, it's in suspension, meaning that during that time there isn't eating, but there isn't an obligation to burn it either. And the question is, V'lo Posak Kedeo Sacheris, and he chose not to rule like the other opinions. So now the Gemara. Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Rav, Halocha Kerebi Yehuda. Halacha follows Rabbi Yehuda, which would mean that the eating of Chometz on the 14th of Nisan can be done up till the end of the fourth hour, but not beyond that. Amar Lei Rova L'Rav Nachman V'Neim Omar Halacha K'Rabbi Meir De Salsam Lon Tano Kavosei. Why not rule like Rabbi Meir, which would then entitle you to eat Chometz not just during the fourth hour, but during the fifth hour as well? And the reason for this suggestion is because we have an unnamed Mishnah in conformity to Rabbi Meir's approach, and an unnamed Mishnah, generally speaking, has more authority to it than other Mishnayos. And what's the unnamed Mishnah? Disnan kol shah shemuter le'echol ma'achil. That when it is mutter for one to eat, one can also feed it to others. This Stam Mishnah conforms to Rebbe Meir, because as far as Rebbe Yehuda is concerned, the situation arises where you reach an hour that you're able to ma'achil, but you yourself cannot eat. So this Mishnah that says as long as you can eat, you can feed others, which essentially is the same as saying as long as you can feed others, you can also eat, that follows Rebbe Meir's approach and not Rebbe Yehuda. So the question then is, why does Rav Paskin like Rebbe Yehuda when you have this source that rules like Rebbe Meir, and it's an unnamed, it's a Stam Mishnah? The Gemara answers, Hahi Lav Stamahu. The Mishnah just cited from the beginning of the second parak of this Masechta, Kol Shah, is not a Stam Mishnah. It's not a Stam Mishnah, it's not authoritative. Mishum Dekashya Mutar. Because of a technical question, the word mutar, namely, when you read this Mishnah at the beginning of the second parak, it says, kol shah shemutar lechol machil labehema, etc. The Mishnah could have read, kol shah sheochel machil, but yet the word mutar was inserted. So Rashi points out, mishum dekashim mutar, but Parakolsha, the second parak of this Masech, the Makshinon, we ask, Kol Shah Sheochel Machil, Miboyale. It could have just as well said, Kol Shah Sheochel, as long as you can eat, you can feed others. Umuter Mashma, the word Mutter that is inserted, connotes or intimates, Kol Shah Shemuter Odom Achir Lechol, Machil Ze Haoser Lechol. Something here, what's being described is that when you are able to feed someone else, it's mutter to feed someone else, you yourself, however, cannot eat. Because of this word mutar and the pshat that we said, we set that Mishnah up like Rabban Gamliel v'hochi komar, and the real understanding is as follows: Kol shah shemuter kohen lechol betruma, all the time that a kohen is allowed to eat on erev Pesach from the truma, that's chometz ma'achil Yisrael chulin labehema. Then a Yisrael can feed his animal, whereas the Yisrael cannot eat himself. Almos tamo lav k'Rebbe Meir hi. What we just said shows you that that Mishnah is not like Rebbe Meir. We just got finished saying that you have a situation where the owner himself cannot eat, but he can feed his animals. And that's all implied by the word mutar. So, that having been said, the Mishnah that seemed to go like Rebbe Meir really is not like Rebbe Meir at all. The Gemara asks, V'neimor mor halacha k'Rabban Gamliel, Dehave lei machria. Why not say the halacha follows Rabban Gamliel in our Mishnah, being that he appears to be a machria? A machria is a term, literally it means he balances one side, he settles the matter how to rule. And how does he appear to be a machria in our Mishnah? Well, because you have the Tanakama, and that is Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir, who seem to be, they are obviously arguing, and Rabbi Gamliel comes along and says that I'll settle the argument. Now, machria means I'll settle the dispute. And what's his suggestion? That chulin are eaten during the first 4 hours. Truma, that could be eaten during the fifth hour. So he's like a type of the middle ground, if you will, and he's called, in this sense, the Gemara thinks that we call him a machria. However, the Gemara says that the term machria, which is of significance, where we say halacha kedivrei machria, that the halacha shall follow the machria, that's when you have a real machria. So if you look in the Gemara, Omar Leh, Rav Nachman says, Rabban Gamliel lav machria hu. Rabban Gamliel is not a machria. Tam denafshei komar. He's really saying his own pshat. Rashi explains, lav machria hu, kidepreciously come up a pirkin. When a third opinion comes along and appears as a third opinion, so it doesn't settle any previous arguments. When we see here in the form of that which Rav Gamliel says, that in Chulin you have the fourth hour and the Truma you have the fifth hour, that's not a hachra. The ein hachras da shlishis machras, v'ha hachras da shlishis hi. This represents, Rabbi Gamliel represents a third opinion, a new third opinion. To Rabbi Meir v'Rabbi Yehuda, lo airi denehve shayach chiluk bein zman shuma lizman chulin klal. The presentation of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda doesn't give you any feeling that you should make a distinction between the truma time and the chulin time. The Havi Tanan, had it said like this, Rabbi Meir Omer Echod Chulin VeEchod Truma Kol Chamesh, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Echod Chulin VeEchod Truma Kol Arba, so that you would have two opposing opinions. Rabbi Meir saying that you can have Chulin and Truma during the fifth hour, and Rabbi Yehuda would say you have Chulin and Truma during the fourth hour. From Gamliel, who of Rabbi Gamliel Omer Chulin Kol Arba Truma Kol Chamesh, and then Rabbi Gamliel would be coming to settle the two previous opinions by saying, with regard to Chulin, we'll go like Rabbi Yehuda. With regard to the Truma, we'll go like Rabbi Meir. So then we would say Havyo Hachra. He has that status of being the settling one, the one that weighs down or shows us how to rule. Avol hashto diinu lo adkur truma v'chulin klal. But now Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda haven't made any mention of any difference between chulin and truma. They haven't even itemized them. They don't show us that there's any grounds for making a distinction between them. So Rabban Gamliel comes and makes a distinction, is represents a new or a third new opinion. Lav hachrohi eladas shlishis. It's not a settling of an opinion of previous opinions by weighing down one side, but rather it's a brand new third opinion. So that's why we say that the halacha that Rav Nachman in the name of Rav did not paskin like Rabban Gamliel. V'boy seimo Rav di Omar ki hai tano. That which Rav said that we eat chometz during the fourth hour and that's it. That's like the following tana. V'boyes emo, Rav di Omar ki hai tana. Another approach is that Rav, when he said that you eat chometz just during the fourth hour and not beyond that, Rav is following the opinion of the following tana found in the following Tanaic source. Just take note that this is a long point. So let's see the source. Desanya, our boss source Shechalios b'Shabbos. The 14th of Nisan that falls out on a Shabbos. Mivarinus hakol milufnei haShabbos. Since you can't burn chometz on Shabbos itself, so you'll have to destroy all the chometz before Shabbos. V'sorfin trumos tameos tuyos utahoros, and you'll have to burn the truma. That is whether it's tome or it's a tuyos means sofek tome. Or tohor, umeshayrin min hatohoros mozon shte suudos, and then you leave over enough food for two meals, and we're talking here about the Shabbos meals. Kdei lechol ad arba shos divrei Rebbe Lozor bar ben Yehuda ish partusa shomar mishum Rebbe Yoshua. So here we have a source here that's telling you that you're going to be leaving over enough food to eat on Shabbos, which is the 14th. You're going to be leaving over enough chometz to eat, but until the fourth hour. That's until the end of the fourth hour. So that's the basis of Rav ruling like Rav Yehuda, which says you can eat only until the fourth hour. Omru lo. Those that argued with this opinion said back, Tahoros, lo yisrafu, don't burn the truma tahora, shema yimtzu lohen ochlin, you might find on Shabbos people to eat it. Omar lohen kvar bikshu velo matzu. No, they already sought out people to eat the truma. Truma, of course, is eaten only by Kohanim, and generally speaking, it's usur to destroy truma for no reason. Here, well, we have a chometz need, chometz prohibition that kicks in, and hence that causes us to burn the truma, but otherwise, you don't burn truma, it's forbidden to destroy truma wantonly, and hence the suggestion was mentioned, maybe you'll find people that can eat the truma that is tahora. We didn't mention before, but truma that's tome or sofek, that is something you cannot eat. But at least the truma tahoros, why not leave over? So you might, because you might find people. So we answered because they did seek out people and realize that there is no one that's going to eat it. Omru lo shema chutz lechoma lanu. So they still question Rebbe Lozor ben Yehuda ish Bartusa and said maybe there are people outside the city that can eat it. Omer lahem ledivrechem, well, according to you that are striving to preserve the truma tahora on the basis that you might find other people to eat it, so af tuyos lo yisrafu, even the sofek tome truma, you should not burn erev Shabbos. Not just the tahor, should you be suggesting, or are you suggesting, leave over more than just two meals worth because you might find people. Well, the Tluyos also leave over and don't burn on Erev Shabbos. Shema Yovo Elio Vitare. Maybe Elio would come and declare them to be Truma Tahora. So right now it's a suffix for us, but maybe he'll declare it to be tahor, and you'll be, and a kohen will be able to eat it. Omru lo, so they said back, as far as your question on us regarding the tlios, that's not a question. Kvar muftoch lahen Yisrael, it's already guaranteed to Israel, to the Jewish people. She'ein elio ba lo ba'arve shabosos v'lo ba'arve yomim tovim mipnei hatorach. Elio is not going to come on Friday, and we're talking right now about the 13th of Nisan that comes out on a Friday. Well, you don't have to worry about or anticipate Elio's coming on a Friday, nor on an Erev Yom Tov, because people are preoccupied with their preparations for Shabbos and Yom Tov, and it would be a great trouble for them if they were to have to go out and greet Elio at the expense of their Shabbos preparations. So he's not going to come on Friday, therefore the possibility of the Tluyos being declared by Elio as Torah on Friday, that's not reasonable. Omru, it was reported, Lo Zozu Misham Ad Shekovu Halocha Kerabi Lezer Ben Yehuda Ish Bartuso Shomar Mishum Rabbi Yoshua. They didn't move from there until the halacha was established like Rabbi Elazar. My lav, afilu le'echol. Is it not so that when they established the halacha like Rabbi Elazar, that includes that which he said, that eating of chometz on Erev Pesach takes place till the fourth hour? So, based on that, Rav ruled like Rabbi Huda, who also is unto the fourth hour. Omar Rav Papa Mishmei Derava Loi. Rav Papa rejects that which we just assumed, namely that which they established the halacha like Rabbi Elazar ben Yehuda. That's only regarding the issue of burning. That's Levaer. Let's read that again. Omar Rav Papa Mishmei Derava Loi. Rather, Levaer. The assumption that we rule like him also regarding the eating time till the fourth hour, that is not what was meant when the Brisa says we paskin like Rabbi Elazar. What was meant is only regarding the issue of Bior, that on the 13th you burn everything that he mentioned, and not like the those that opposed him that said you're not to mevayer the taros until Shabbos itself. And of course you're not going to do it through burning, but through flushing them away or something of that nature. So at this point then, the suggestion that Rav was basing himself on Rabbi Elazar ben Yehuda is not what the Gemara accepts. So we're left with the original statement of Rav saying the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. We understand why he did not paskin like Rabbi Meir, and we understood why he didn't paskin like Rabbi Gamliel, assuming that Rabbi Gamliel had been a machria. The Gemara said he's not a machria, and the assumption that Rav would paskin like the following Tana, based on his comment of Oichlin ad Dalit Shos, that also is unreasonable. We continue in the Gemara. V'af Rebbe Sovar Laha de Rav Nachman. Rebbe also holds from Rav Nachman's ruling. And we have a star to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara. You can align it with the star at the third line from the top, and you'll see this is a reference to Rav Nachman, who said the halacha shall follow Rebbe Yehuda. So the Gemara says, V'af Rebbe Savar Laha de Rav Nachman. The Omar Ravin, and take note of the fact that this is a long point, and also on this very, very technical point, when we say here that Rebbe holds like Rav Nachman, it doesn't mean Rebbe heard Rav Nachman's Shita and then he then paskins like that, but rather he's in the same spirit as that which Rav Nachman ruled. After all, Rebbe lived many years before Rav Nachman. So the Gemara means that Rebbe adopts the same trend of thought or the same ruling as Rav Nachman had ruled many years later. And where do we see this? The Amar Ravin bar Rav Ado, Maisa Bodem Echad, was an incident involving a person, Shehifkid Diskia Mleo Chometz, Eitzel Yoichanon Chakuka. It's a person that entrusted a diskios, a type of receptacle. This receptacle was filled with chometz. It's a double sack made of leather, filled with chometz. And the Odom, this person entrusted it by Yochanan Chalkukal, that's his name, v'nokvua achborim, mice had made holes in the sacks, v'hoya chometz v'atzes yoseh, and chometz were penetrated and was pointing through the holes that were made by the achborim. Uba l'fnei Rebbe, the case came to Rebbe, it's the sacks and the chometz that's in them. And it's Erev Pesach, what do you do? Shah Rishonah lo Omar lo Hamtein. Shah Rishonah Omar lo Hamtein. First hour, he said, just wait. Shni Omar lo Hamtein. Shlishis Omar lo Hamtein. Revius, the fourth hour of the day, Omar lo Hamtein. Chamishis Omar lo Tsei Umochro Bashuk. The fifth hour, where it's usher to eat it. So he says, go and sell it in the market. The shomer, the guard, is told to sell it, the pikodon, in the market, which is a time that it's, the chamishis is the fifth hour, which is a time that chometz is still mutter bahanoah, mutter to benefit from it. My lav, what is meant when it says sell it in the marketplace? Lenochrim, kereb Yehuda, sell it to Gentiles, like Rabbi Yehuda would suggest. Namely, Gentiles are not prohibited in eating the chometz, and as a Jew, you're allowed to benefit from it at that hour, but you are not allowed to eat it. A Jew is not allowed to eat it. So that the suggestion of go and sell it in the marketplace, it's sell it to non-Jews. Well, that would be like Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, that a Jew can eat it only during the fourth hour, not afterwards. And in this case, we see in the fifth hour, he said the ruling was go out and sell it, and the assumption is sell it to Nochrim, like Rabbi Yehuda would say. That is only Nochrim can eat during the fifth hour, not Jews. Omar Rav Yosef, Loi. He rejects what we just said. Li Yisrael, Karebi Meir. Sell it in the marketplace to a fellow Jew, being that this is in accordance with Rabbi Meir, that says that fifth hour is a time that you're allowed to eat from it as well. Omar le Abaye, I li Yisrael nishkale lenafshe. If it's an issue of selling it to a Jew, why doesn't the owner just keep it for himself? Or in this case, let's say not the owner, but the shomer, the one who's guarding it. So the Gemara answers, mishum chashoda. There's an element of suspicion that will be aroused if I take an item that I was asked to watch and then keep it for myself, of course, setting aside money for payment of that article that I was asked to watch. That's the chashad. What's the chashad? Well, you might pay a lower price than it's actually worth. Disanya, we have an illustration of where chashad comes up. It's a different context, but it's the same theme. Daboy tzedaka, shein lahem aniyim lechalek. These are the people entrusted in collecting for the poor, and eventually dividing out what they collected on the poor's behalf. But given a situation of a gabay tzedaka who doesn't have poor people in the vicinity to disperse the charity funds. So the gabay tzedaka, he has to watch the money, he has to keep it in safekeeping. So the source says, portin lacherim, v'ein portin latzmon. The Rashi, if you notice around three lines from the bottom, portin, prutos shel nechoshes shegovu litzdaka, u'kshe Mashin or some machlido sorch lefortan bekesef. They collected when you collect stoka, you can often expect people to give the smallest coins and still fulfill their request being made of them to give stoka. Now those coins are made of copper and they can decay or corrode in the course of time. So what would a gabay tzedaka do if he doesn't have the poor to immediately transfer to them the prutos. So he will change the coins, these small copper coins, in favor of larger silver coins. And now, the main point we've dashed underlined, this transfer of money, of the prutos, exchanging them for silver, that's done only with others. You don't, as a gabay tzedakah, you wouldn't take these prutos, these copper coins that you collected, and make the exchange with yourself, with your own silver coins. That's ein portin latzman. And again, the reason for that is, was because of chashash, or chashad. Gaboy tamchoy, shein lehem aniyim, lechalek. These are people in charge of making a food collection for the poor, and you can have a situation where they collected food, but there are no aniyim to disperse unto them the food. Mochrin lacherim, vein mochrin latzman. So they will sell the food to others in the community, but they don't sell it to themselves. Mishum shenemar v'isem nekiyam Hashem Yisrael. The person should strive to be squeaky clean from Hashem and from Yisrael. That means that one has to avoid doing things that can arouse suspicion. Amar le Rav Ado bar Matana Rav Yosef beferush amris lon tsei umochron lenochrim karebi Yehuda. So Rav Ado points out to Rav Yosef that you told us that in an explicit fashion that you sell them at during the fifth hour lenochrim. In other words, that which we saw before in the name of Yochanan Chalkuka, and he was told by Rebbe, go out and sell them. Here we're taking a stance different than that which we tried to say before, but rather sell them to a Gentile. And that idea would reflect Shitas Reb Yehuda, that a Jew cannot eat it at the fifth hour anymore. So the only option you have to do with the truma, with the chometz, that is, and you sell it to Gentiles. Omar Rav Yosef, Keman Azlo HaShmaitz of the Rebbe, based on whom does Rebbe teach his Shmaitz, his teaching? Kor Mishuman Ben Gamliel. This is in accordance with Rav Shimon Gamliel, namely Rebbe's teaching that we had above, that if you have some entrusted chometz and it's getting late on Erev Pesach, go out and sell it. That idea is like that of Rav Shimon Gamliel. Tisnan hamafkid peres etzel chavero, someone who entrusted fruits by his friend, afilu hein avudim, even if they are going to be a loss, lo yiga bohen, you as the shomer, as the agent to watch it, are not allowed to touch them. Rav Shimon Omer, mochor mebezin ve hashoas aveda. Take the pikadon, article that you have to watch, bring it to the court, and sell it in the presence of the court, so that you will thereby preserve something. Hashoas aveda literally means returning a lost article, but here we're talking about the preservation of the value of the fruits that are currently avud in there, they're rotting. So in order to preserve something on behalf of the owner, so conduct the sale of the fruits to others and get their cash value, and that you will be able to give to the owner. Omar le Abaye. Abaye will reject that which we just said. And he says, "V'lav itmar alo Omar Rabo bar Chano Omar Rabbi Yochanan." Was it not said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan? Lo shanu ella, that which the Tanakhama said, don't touch them. If you were entrusted with fruits, leave them until the owner comes out. Don't touch them. That idea is lo shanu ella b'chdei chesroinan. Avol yoser b'chdei chesroinan mochrin bebeisin. Bichtei Chesronon is a situation of their diminishing in value little by little. Or there's the case of avudim that we had, is the fruits are diminishing in value little by little. And that which we said, according to the Tanakhama, don't touch them, that's where the loss, as we said, is an average expected type depreciation. But if there's some rapid or major depreciation, that's yoser mechdei chesronam, more than the value that you would expect them to depreciate, then mochron bebeisdin. You can sell them in the court, and we're going to add here, even according to the Rabbonan, namely the Tanakhama. The kol shekein, hacha, and all the more so here, when you're dealing with chometz in the sixth hour, da psedi legamri, they're going to become totally valueless anyway, because they're aser b'hano. The Oid Omar of Yehuda, Shtei Chalos, we saw in the Mishnah, Reb Yehuda speaking about two chalos of a korban toida that were placed in the Loshon of the Mishnah, al gav ha'itzdabo, that represented different points in time when they could, dealing with regard to the chometz Erev Pesach on Yud Daled Nisan. The Gemara focuses on these two chalos of the korban toda. Toni Tano Kamei Rav Yehuda. An individual taught a Tanaic source in front of Rav Yehuda, al gav hoitzdaba. In other words, the two lobes were placed al gav. Now, that would mean on the benches or the chairs themselves that made up the itzdaba. The itzdaba was a type of, we'll say, a row of chairs or of benches that lined the inside wall of the Har HaBayis, of the Temple Mount. So it says in this source that these two loaves were placed on the chairs themselves. Omar le v'chi lahatznion hu tzorich. Rav Yehuda asks this individual is teaching over the Mishnah, speaking about gav hoitzdaba, does he need to hide them or keep them in safekeeping? Was it not so that the breads were placed there so that they should be visible to the entire tzibor, the entire community? Therefore, tani al gag hoitzdaba, there was a roof that ran above all of these benches that were lining the Har HaBayis. So the more correct reading is to have the loaves placed on the roof above the itzdaba. Omar Rachbo, Omar of Yehuda, Har HaBayis, Stov Koful Hoya, the Temple Mount, looked like or was made of a double row of these benches that or chairs, stools that lined the Temple Mount from within the wall of the Temple Mount. Tanyo Nami Hochi. We have a Tanaic source supporting this. Har HaBayis Stov Koful Hoya. It was a double row of these itztabois. Rav Yehuda Omer istavonis hoisa nikreis stov lifnim istov. It was called itztavonis, which appears to be a Greek word, and it was a double layer of them. That's stov lifnim mistov, one row set in more inwards from the other. And we continue with a quote from the Mishnah. We mentioned these two loaves of the Korban Toda. We should mention, just by way of background, though we have mentioned this in previous Shiurim, when we saw this in the Mishnah, the Korban Toda was a sacrifice that, in addition to the sheep that constituted the animal, the meat section of the Korban, there were also 40 loaves that accompanied them. 10 of the 40 loaves were chometz loaves. And in our case, these loaves happened to be psulos. They were unfit, and they were used as the time markers. If we look on the side of the Gemara under our Nosei Mivneh heading, you'll notice a diamond, and we've written Gimel Deos. There are three opinions, Be'inyan Hani Shnei Chalois Shel Toida, regarding these two loaves of the Korban. Toda Shoy Munochis Al Gag Hoitzdaba. One, Psulos. Two, Ksheros Hoyu. They really were kosher. Elo Shinikru Psulos, but they were called Psulos. And three, Ksheros Legamri. They were really totally kosher. Of course, then we still have to deal with the lashon of psulos. The Gemara. Amai psulos. What made them psulos? As the Mishnah says, the loaves were psulos. Amar Rav Chanina. Amar Rabbi Chanina. Notice that he's the number one, the first explanation. As we go down the Omid, we said there were three diamonds. Amar Rabbi Chanina. Mitoch shoyim merubois. Since there were many, that means on the 13th of Nisan, being that they could not bring this Korban Torah, the population was restricted from bringing this Korban Torah during the Pesach holiday, anyone who needed to bring this particular sacrifice would bring them before Pesach, and it would be like we'll call a holiday rush, resulting in such that on the 13th of Nisan there were many brought, and this korban had a 1 day time allotment for consuming it. Now, to consume 40 loaves would require many people to join in participating in the eating of this korban, and if you multiply one korban with 40 loaves by many people bringing that kind of korban, so you can imagine there wouldn't be enough people to eat all of it. So there would be leftover, and that's called nifsolos belino. They became puzzle, unfit. By lino means they extended, they were there beyond their time, so that you're dealing with loaves that were part of a 13th of Nisan korban todah, leftover till the 14th of Nisan, and at that point they're puzzle. Once the night passes, they become unfit. And that's the passage of the night is the point. The expression lino represents that. Desanya, the source tells us, Eimavian toda b'chag hamatzos mitnei chomei tshaba. One is not allowed to bring a korban toda on chag hamatzos on Pesach because of the chomets content. Well, pshita, that's obvious. Omar of Adubrava, hocha biyudalid askinon. The source that says Ein Mevi'in Toida B'chag HaMatzos because of Chometz, that's obvious. It's you don't need a Tanaic source to tell you that which anyone knows. So what's the source speaking about when it says you don't bring a Korban Toda on Pesach, on Chag HaMatzos? So Rav Avi explains, Hocha B'yudalet Askinon, we're talking, it really is referring to on the 14th of Nisan you do not bring a Korban Toda, because Sovar, this Tana is of the opinion, Ein Mevi'in Kochim Lebeis HaPsul. You don't bring a korban in such a way that you know it is going to become pusul. If you were to bring a korban toda on the 14th of Nisan, you know that you won't be able to eat it that night. So you're bringing a korban into a situation that's going to become pusul. Therefore, v'kulei alma b'shloishoser ma'isi luhu. Therefore, there was, as we described before, the holiday rush. Everyone was going to bring their korban todas on the 13th of Nisan. Umitov shem rubos, and since there are so many being brought, nifsalos b'lin, there aren't enough people to eat it, so they naturally become posel by staying over the night, and once the 14th morning hits, you can't eat them anymore. We continue with the number two pshat in psulos, mishum rabianai omru, ksheros hoyu. The loaves were kosher. V'yalo amai kori luhu psulos. Why were they referred to as unfit? Shelo nishchat alein hazevach. Now, that means that you had dedicated loaves for a korban torah, but the sheep that's brought along with the korban torah, that sheep was not slaughtered. Before we go on, just let's take note of the house marking on the side of the Gemara. Shnei Shlovim Lahazbir of Yane. We're going to have two stages as you go down. There's one here and a few lines later, stage two, and trying to explain Rav Yane. There is a triangle marking that appears also. These are Kushos al Shlav Alav Shel Rav Yane. These will be questions on this first stage. So you'll notice a number of triangles within the Aleph house. So Rav Yane is explaining that the loaves referred to in the Mishnah of the Korban Torah that are psulos really were kosher, but they're called psulos because the korban that accompanies them, or it's actually more accurate to say the loaves accompany the korban, but the korban, the animal sacrifice, wasn't slaughtered. And you can work with the assumption that in order for the loaves to be kosher, you need to have the sacrifice slaughtered as well. So the Gemara asks, Vinishcho, oh, so if it wasn't slaughtered, so slaughter it. Slaughter the sheep as the mainstay of the sacrifice, and the loaves will be kosher. Why wasn't that done? Answer, She'ovad hazevach. The sheep that was originally dedicated to be the korban torah, this person's korban torah, got lost. Question, V'naisi zevach acher v'nishchoit? Well, why not bring a replacement sheep and slaughter it, thereby making the loaves kosher and not having them be called pusel? Answer, why that's not an option? The omar zu toida v'zu lachmo. When the person made his initial dedication, he declared, this is the korban torah, pointing to the sheep, and these are its loaves. Uchida rabo, and based on Rabo's teaching, Doma Rabo, Ovad halechem evi lechem achir. If you have a situation where after dedicating the sheep and the accompanying loaves, the loaves got lost, you can bring replacement loaves. Avdo toito ein mevi tod achers. However, if the sheep that you originally dedicated got lost, you can't bring another sheep to serve as the sheep for the loaves that remained there. The Gemara asks, my taima, why is that? Why do you say that if the loaves are lost, they can be replaced? They can be replaced to accompany the sheep. However, if the sheep is lost, you can't bring a replacement sheep for the benefit of the loaves that remained. So the Gemara answers, lechem glal toda. Glal, sometimes you might see the word in the following form, big glal. That means because of lechem, the bread is brought because of the sheep. The toda is the reference to the sheep, which indicates that the bread is subsidiary to the animal. The ein toda glal lechem. However, the sheep is not brought because you have breads. So that once the mainstay is lost, there's no replacement option. Question: Finifkinu lechulin. Why do you view or term the loaves that got lost, that the loaves that were there because the animal was lost, you're calling the loaves pusel? Why do you call them that? Why not redeem them? That as long as the animal was not slaughtered, so the loaves don't gain what's called inherent sanctity or kedushas haguf, and as long as they don't have this inherent sanctity, even though they may have been dedicated for a korban torah, they nevertheless can be redeemed. And since they can be redeemed, why do we let them go to be lost? We let them go for a loss. The option here is, as the Gemara is suggesting, redeem them and they become mundane, and the sanctity that they had goes on to money. Ela li'olam shenishchat alein hazevach v'nishbach hadam. We're describing the loaves as really having no further takona. They are a total loss. Why? What happened? You have breads, and you had, in fact, yes, shechted, slaughtered the korban, the sheep that constitutes the korban todah. Once you did that, so the breads get what's called an inherent sanctity, kedushas aguf. However, the blood that is collected after the slaughtering of the sheep, that blood is eventually supposed to be sprinkled, cast on the Mizbeach. If that would have been done, that's considered a complete offering, and then the bread is distributed, is then eaten as part of the korban. However, the blood never got sprinkled. It spilled out. And if we look in the Rashi, a few lines under the Gemara, Ukigon Shinishbach Adam, Umiyu Adayan Enon Tuunos Srefa. Just because the blood spilled out, the blood which is considered a matir, that which allows the bread to be eaten, even though it spilled out and wasn't used in its purpose, namely sprinkling on the mizbeach. Nevertheless, the breads cannot be burnt yet. Utsrichus la'abir tsurasan. That means you have to leave them over till they become pusel. The term la'abir tsurasan might mean literally until they lose their form, but that's a function of a passive psul setting upon them, a passive ruination. Disnan b'ketzat soilin, the Mishnah in Psochim, later in this Masechta, says, "Kol shepsul begufo yisurf miad." Something that's inherently posel is to be burnt immediately. Bedamu bebailim, if the psul in the item is a function of an outside loss, whether it's a question of the blood spilling out or the owner becoming unfit, then we say tubar tsurasa v'yetzel beis esreifa. It's to be left over until the time becomes the rendering factor, and then it's sent out to be burnt. V'afilu hachi mizalzalinon behu v'avinon luhu hasam. And even so, even though it's going to be burnt, in the meantime the breads are placed. These breads that have become pusel because of nishbach adam are placed on the roof of the itztabot to serve as time markers for the community. We continue in the Gemara. The Gemara asks a question. You'll notice it's a long question. The style of this question is to set up this answer according to one opinion as opposed to someone else. In other words, the Gemara is going to say, is this Hesber for our Mishnah then going to be making our Mishnah in accordance with Rebbe as opposed to Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon, whose name will appear later? The Gemara, after the long question, if you skim down, you can see there's a long answer that follows, at which point the Gemara says, Afilu Teima Reb Elazar Reb Shimon. The answer, the Hesber that we're giving for our Mishnah, can make it such that our Mishnah is in accordance with Reb Elazar Reb Shimon as well. So now the Gemara is going to ask, what Ukeman, that which we just said, that through slaughtering alone, the breads become kadosh. And when the breads become kadosh, and we didn't mention this before, but when they become kadosh, when they become sanctified with kedusha saguf, with this inherent form of kedusha, they can no longer be redeemed. Redemption is an option for kachim that become posel, but kachim that originally had only kedushas domim to them, a value sanctity as opposed to an inherent sanctity. So what made the loaves what brought them to this point that they're called psulos and they have no takona through pidyon? So we said because shechita alone was done. So just because shechita alone was done, they can't be redeemed anymore. So the Gemara is asking, who says that? Ucheman, Kerebi, are we saying that our Mishnah then will be in conformity to Rebbe Yomar Rebbe? Shnei Dvorim Hamatirin, Malin ze below ze. If you have something that requires two matirin, two elements to enable it to become mutter, that each one on its own can raise the level of the item to sanctity, to kedushas haguf, even though the other action or item wasn't done. In our case, all we have is shechita. There's also zrika sadam. That's another one of the matirin. And even though the dam was not nizrak, all that happened was shechita took place, yet we see that elevated the loaves to a point that they can no longer be redeemed. So this is something that seems to be only like Shitas Rebbe, as opposed to, we'll see later, Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon. So should we say that our Mishnah is in accordance with a singular opinion? Let's continue in our Gemara. Rebbe says, and when you have two things that are matir, and in this case, Shechita and Zrika are the matirin, are the elements that enable, that will enable the korban to become mutter. Rashi says, and there, we have a double star in the Rashi, Shechita, Zrika, mina matirin es hazevach, ve'es ha-tolui bo. They're matir, the animal, the meat itself to be eaten, and tolui bo, and that which is dependent upon it, that's in this case the breads that accompany the korban. So when you have two actions or elements like that, Malin zebloze, that means they raise it to the level. Malin is to raise something to the level of Kedusha Seguf, to inherent Kedusha. Even though you won't really be able to have full benefit from it until the second matir is done. Desanya, kifsei atzeres, the sheep that are brought on Shavuos, on the Shavuos holiday, they are brought along with two loaves, which are known as the Shnei Alechem. So the source says the Kifsei Atzeres ein mekatshinas alechem ela b'shchita. The Kifsei Atzeres don't impose sanctity on the bread other than through their being slaughtered. Ketzad? Now, to illustrate, how do you illustrate that? Shachton l'shmon v'zorak domon l'shmon kidei shalechem. If you did everything properly, you slaughtered the sheep with the right intention, and you sprinkled their blood with the right intention, so the bread becomes sanctified. Shachton sheloi lishmon, v'zorak domon shelo lishmon. If you slaughtered them without the proper intention, and sprinkled their blood without the proper intention, lo kidesh halechem. So the bread does not become sanctified. Shachton lishmon v'zorak domon shelo lishmon. You slaughtered with proper intention, sprinkled the blood with improper intention. Lechem kadosh ve'eno kadosh divrei Rebbe. The bread is sanctified, but not completely. That means it's sanctified to the extent that if it were to leave the temple courtyard, they leave the azorah, it will become pusel. And if it becomes pusel, so of course it has to be destroyed. And the kadosh referred to, it's kadosh to become pasul biyotze, and also that you cannot redeem them any further. You can't redeem them anymore. They've reached that level that we called before inherent kedusha, kedusha zaguf, which is a form of sanctity that that precludes redemption. The eno kadosh means they're not sanctified enough that you can actually eat them. That's Rebbe's opinion. Rebbe Elazar ben Shimon Omer le'olam eino kodosh halechem ad sheyishchot lishmon v'yizrok domon lishmon. Rebbe Elazar ben Shimon says it doesn't gain any inherent level of kedusha until both procedures are done properly, the shechita and the zrika lishmon. So we are saying, though, in the dashed underlined house, that marking that follows the house above, where the animal, the korban todah, was slaughtered, but nishpach hadam, the blood was not sprinkled, and yet we're saying it cannot be redeemed anymore, hence they're considered psulos. So that analysis would seem to conform only to with Rebbe, and not Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon. The Gemara responds, afilu tema Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon, our Mishnah with the explanation we saw above of nishchat hazevach and nishpach hadam can work even according to Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon. Hocha b'mayaskinan, the case of our Mishnah where we're saying the breads were pusel as a result of nishchat aleihem v'nishpach hadam, kigon sheniskabel hadam b'kois v'nishpach. There was Kabbalah Sadam, that means the blood was received in the vessel that's for the designed for receiving the blood, and it spilled out. And Rebbe Elazar, the son of Rebbe Shimon, holds like his father's opinion, namely Rebbe Shimon, the Omar, Rebbe Shimon's opinion is, that which is literally standing to be sprinkled, in other words, it's it's available, it's been received in the vessel after the slaughtering, the blood has been collected into the vessel at the slaughtering point. It's ready to be sprinkled. It's considered as if it's already sprinkled. Now, when we say that, it doesn't mean that if it spills out at this point and it hasn't been actually sprinkled that you can eat from the loaves, but it means that it's considered as if it's sprinkled regarding this chalois shein kedush on it, that it becomes, it's now considered something that has kedush as a guf, and as Rashi says at the bottom, kezoro domi lochul olov kol shein psul kotshe kotshim, that any level of psul that's relevant to kotshe kotshim is shayach here. But to allow them to be eaten, they do not become allowed until there's an actual sprinkling of the blood. We continue, and as you can see, we have a third triangle, a third diamond, and that ties us into the sugya of three different approaches to explaining the Mishnah that spoke about breads, the lachmei Torah psulos. Mishum Rabbi Elozer Omru, in his name, it was said, Sherosoyu, they really were kosher breads. He is a Tano, so he can actually say a pshat that's different than our Mishnah. Rabbi Elozer says they were kosher loaves. Kol Zman Shemunachos Kol Omochlim, as long as the two breads are on the roof of the Itztabah, so that's a sign that it's still time available for eating chometz. Nitlo achas mehen, if one of the two loaves were removed, toilin, which means lo oichlin velo surfin, you are not allowed to eat anymore, but you're not obligated to burn yet. Nitlu shteim, if the second loaf was removed, hischilu kulon surfin, that would be an indication that it's time for everyone to engage in the burning of the chometz. Tanya, Abba Shol Omer, we continue at the top of Yud Dalid Omer Aleph. Shtei Poros Hoyu Chorshos Bahara Mashcha. Abba Shol tells us that there were two cows that were plowing on the Mount of Olives on the 14th of Nisan to serve as a sign regarding the times relevant to the chometz and its destruction. So you have two cows plowing. Kol zman shishtein chorshos kolom ochlin. As long as the two cows were plowing, so that's a sign for the tzibur to continue eating. They're still allowed to eat. Nitelas achas mehen, if one of them was removed, toilin lo ochlin velo sorfin. Then, as we've learned already, we're in a state of suspense, if you will. There's no eating. However, there's no obligation to burn yet. Nitlu shtehen, when the second cow was also removed, hischilu kol ha'om sorfin. That was a sign for everyone to start the burning. Before we conclude, let us just remind you that we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. So with that, we conclude our shiur for today.